You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM in HD1 San Francisco, on Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube. Powered by First NorCal Credit Union. Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, it was just one of those days for the Niners defense and really for the offense too. Sunday in Green Bay, 38-10, the Packers beat the Niners. They get blown out. Worst loss in Niners history against the Green Bay Packers. And these are two teams that have played for a very, very long time. Welcome back to Willard and Dibs. No Willard and Dibs this week. Happy early Thanksgiving to everybody out there. It's Mark, Randy, the Great, Loneal, Jake Hutchinson with you. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe, though, to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And while you're there, check out what Brian Baldinger had to say about the Niners' loss to the Packers earlier today. That was with Bonte and Shasky on the Morning Roast. Meanwhile, right now here on Willard and Dibs, we've got our own offensive lineman to talk to. So without further ado, let's go out to the River Islands guest lines. We're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. Stink, happy early Thanksgiving to you. Thanks for coming on. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys as well.
Yeah, appreciate that. So what'd you see when you watched Niners Packers 38-10? I imagine it's been a while since you've seen the Niners put out an effort like that. What's your take from what you saw the Niners put out there on Sunday in Green Bay?
Hey, what did I see? I saw an ass whooping is what I saw. listen, inability to stop the run. Like Derek, I'll tell you what, Lo, you got to be as excited as I am to watch some of these running backs, to watch the run game, to watch some fullbacks get involved in the National Football League. It just feels like teams have started to realize, hey, listen, if everybody's going to get small, if everybody's going to play dime and nickel, and they're going to have 215-pound linebackers, we're going to line up and thunder punch people in the teeth. And I love it. Like, to me, it's the greatest thing in the world. Like, there are three things that don't lie. Small children, physicality in the running game, and yoga pants. Those are three things that just flat don't lie. And I tell you what, Green Bay with Josh Jacobs, they ran the style of the ball like we're used to seeing the San Francisco 49ers run it. And, you know, one of the things that I've always been able to count on with the 49ers is explosives, right? We're going to run the ball so well. We've got such a diverse run game, and we've got so many great play-action stuff that marry perfectly to the run game that we have that we're always going to get 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 explosive plays a game. And you can count on that. And explosive plays, you look at the NFL, explosive plays, each explosive equates to about 3 points usually. And when you're not pulling explosive plays, when you're not creating explosive plays in the pass game, you're not getting them in the run game. I mean, when was the last time we saw McCaffrey get a 12-yard run? I just don't even remember it. So, you know, you got to put 8, 10, 12 plays together, put a touchdown drive. It's really hard to do. It's a really hard thing to do in the NFL. And that's what I see with the Niners right now. 17 points against Seattle, 10 points against Green Bay. It's good enough to get you bounced from the playoffs. That's what it's good enough for.
Mark, we talked to Chris Foerster, their offensive line coach and run game coordinator, after the draft, and he basically said explicitly that this team values skill position players over offensive line. I wonder, do you think the Niners need to sort of recalibrate that and put their emphasis back on the trenches, especially on the offensive line?
Yeah, well, I mean, I thought Pooney has played really well, and obviously, you know, you've put a lot of assets into Trent Williams, who's one of the greatest that's ever played the game. And so, you know, they put some assets there, and usually their scheme is so good that they can get that thing done. And then, you know, you look at, you know, the backup guys, and I just watched school play, you know, in Tampa for Tristan Wirfs and played pretty well. So it's not just having, you know, it's not just having your starters intact, but it's having guys that can play when you get injured. And that's one of the big issues in the NFL, in my opinion. When I played, all our backup offensive linemen were pretty much former starters. They all had three, 4 years of starting under their belt. So when you lost a guy, you weren't trying to break in a rookie who didn't know what he was doing and, you know, and wasn't ready to play and with bus protections and all that stuff. You're bringing in a guy that had played for a long time. And what's happened is, you know, in the NFL, we like to pay, you know, 8, 10, 12 guys. And then we like to make, you know, save money with bringing in rookies and first-year guys that, you know, probably don't have any business being on the team. And that's where we kind of save money. And the offensive line, unfortunately, is one of those places where teams try to save money. They try to save, you know, cap value. And that's the one place you can't save money. Man, you've got to have guys that know what they're doing. And especially in today's game, because we don't get to practice. Man. And I tell people, anybody that'll listen to me, man, it's the most skilled position in football. Because as an offensive lineman, and I'll put fullback in there because you guys are honorary offensive linemen.
Right.
You know, when you think about moving a man from point A to point B against his will, and then on top of that, you're the worst athlete collectively as a group. You're the worst athletes on the football field, and we're expected to win 100% of every battle we get into. So, I mean, I can have a great game. I can win 64 out of my 65 plays. I give up one sack, and I'm a piece of garbage. The other guy goes to a Pro Bowl. Like, that's the game that we play. And you can't name one other sport, one other position in any sport where a lesser athlete matches up against a better athlete, and the lesser athlete's expected to win 100% of the battles. And if he doesn't, he's a piece of garbage. Name one. I'll wait. You can't.
Yeah, you're listening to 95.7 The Game right now. Hey, Stink, real quick, I love where you're at because I think you're absolutely nailing it. Hey, when you think about where the Niners is right now, and you're thinking about a Buffalo team that I think probably is the best team in the AFC, how does the Niners, when do you know it's over? You know, me and you played this game a long time. When do, you know you can win your individual battle, but when do you know that, okay, it's just something's off this year? You know, how do you hit that reset button?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think usually you've got a pretty good idea in your locker room when, you know, you just aren't tied together as a group. And, you know, especially offensively, when nothing seems to go your way, when you can't, you know, when you can't have continuity and it's always a different guy, there's always different guys in and out of the game plan. So, I mean, that's always a hard thing to deal with because everybody's such a competitor. But, you know, when those things happen to me or when those things happen to a football team, to me it's about small and up and simple and down and saying, okay, what can we do? Let's do one thing. Let's do it exceptionally well and let's build three or four adjunct plays off of that one thing that we can do. And at least we're not going to screw that up. At least we'll have some success doing that, and then we can build off of that stuff. So, you know, to me, it's not about getting more complex. It's about simpling down when you're struggling and finding, you know, one thing, two things that you do really well and just live in that world. Then change it up with different personnel groupings, different formations, motions, but you're running the same thing. I mean, I played for 6 years for Kyle's dad, Mike, and we really ran six plays. Now, we ran them out of a bunch of different formations and personnel groupings, and we motioned and we shifted and we did all that stuff. But it's that 10,000-hour rule. Like, I always thought about it from the standpoint of, hey, you may have defended this time or this particular play 100 times, but I've run it 10,000 times, so I'm better than you, and I know it. And, like, I mean, when we got into a short yardage situation, we had three plays. There was three plays coming in, 18-19 handoff, 14-15 handoff, or QB sneak. One of those three plays is coming in, and on second down and one, it was a shot down. It was, we're going to convert, we're going to beat you up physically, we're going to wear you down so your pass rush is good, and that's how we're going to win. And so those are the things that, to me, have always worked throughout my career when we found ourselves as an offense struggling.
Longtime NFL offensive lineman Mark Schlereth with us here on Willard and Dibbs. And insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Stink, I mean, obviously, there's no surprise that what happened on Sunday, given all the Niners' injuries. You're without your quarterback. You're without Trent Williams. You're without Nick Bosa. You're already without Brandon Ayuk and a number of other guys. But even when the Niners have been relatively healthy this year, we've seen signs that this is no longer the team that was, you know, three consecutive NFC championship games and gone to two Super Bowls under Kyle Shanahan. Is this just injury problems in your mind, or is there something bigger going on here? Is it on Kyle Shanahan to evolve and adjust and try to attack a different way? What do you see from a wider perspective? Is this just injury based, or is there something bigger going on here?
I think it is mostly injury based, but then there is, you know, things that you just expect to be good at and you've been good at for a long time that you're just no longer executing very well. And sometimes that's because of injuries and because you're playing different guys and they don't see it the same. And, you know, when you don't have that continuity, you know, from the standpoint of all the weapons that you normally have on a football field, when you have a healthy McCaffrey, when you have, you know, a healthy Kittle, when you have a healthy Ayuk and a Deebo Samuel, and you've got, you know, Juszczyk, I mean, it makes it really difficult because everybody's got to pick their poison, and you can't take them all. You can't have a great matchup against every one of those guys. So the injuries play, you know, a major role in that. And then guys learning how to play, guys learning the nuance of football. It's one thing to draw things up and say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But let me just tell you, and Lo will you know, second this, it never looks like it does on the grease board. It never looks like it does on film. When you get on a football field, it's always different. There's always an alignment that doesn't match what you saw in the game film or what you saw on the grease board. And so you have to have guys that are smart. You have to have guys that are experienced. You have to have guys that understand and can adjust. And like when you're playing exactly by the book, and that's a big issue, you know, when you're playing ultimately a bunch of different players, they play by the book. They don't play by nuance. And the game is played by nuance. The great teams play nuanced style of football. And, you know, I'll go back to that Kansas City game where the Buffalo Bills won it and that long scramble where Josh Allen ran over a couple of guys. He said, hey, man, we were expecting to get man. They were in man every time we practiced it. They were in man every time we looked at that on film, and they played a zone. And it was a bad, like, we had man beaters on. It was a zone offensive, you know, or defense, excuse me. And so all of a sudden I was like, well, none of these routes are good. So I just pulled the ball and took off.
Right.
Like, that's, like, sometimes that's what happens. And, again, it goes back to that. When I've done it 10,000 times, there's nothing you can do that's going to surprise me. Like I can line up at left guard and we can run 19 handoff force, 19 bounce, 19 pitch, 19 toss. We can run them all. And there's not one defense that you can line up in that I'll be confused on. There's nothing you can do to confuse me because I've run it 8 million times. And when all of a sudden you're a young guy and you get a bad shade, I mean, go back to the Super Bowl. How do you not block Chris Jones?
Right.
Like those are things that happen when young guys fail to communicate and they see something that's a look that just doesn't make sense to them. That's what ends up happening to you.
Mark, you go back to just the way this training camp went with, you know, they had no Christian McCaffrey, Ayuk holding out, Trent Williams holding out, and I was there every day watching it, and it just didn't look right. The energy's not right. I wonder, how much do you think that matters? I know we're deep into the season, but how much do you think not having a training camp with all of those key players there, how much do you think that matters?
I think all those things. I think all those things add up. They all matter, right? It does. You know, you can sit there and say, "Well, you know, young guys got opportunities and reps and this, that, and the other." But you know, Christian McCaffrey being out, not being the dynamic player that he normally is, that hurts you, man. It just really hurts you. And then having the energy of certain guys,
right?
Like there's always guys that are just a difference in a locker room from an energy standpoint, what they bring to the locker room. And you can be around rehabbing and stuff. And trust me, man, I spend a lot of my career rehabbing. It's different, right? You don't feel like you're part of the team. You're not the same. You don't have the same impact that you do when you're there every day. And those things matter. You know, I go back to a couple guys that we let go later on in my career that were huge energy guys. One guy was Dave Diaz-Infante. We called him the stunt guard because he practiced for me all week and I played on Sundays.
Love
and he's still one of my best buddies of all time. And you would think, you know, that would be a situation that would cause animosity. But we are best. We studied together. We prepped together. It was like we were playing together. And, like, there's this special energy that exists because of that. The other guy was Keith Burns. He was locker room levity. He was our best special teams player. And we let that guy go, and it changed the dynamic of our locker room, and it was different. And those things are incredibly important, and I think oftentimes coaches don't see it.
Right.
They don't understand it because they're not in there. They're, you know, most of them, they're not allowed in the locker room. You guys have the upstairs. Stay up there. And so there's just some of those things that they matter, and they do. It's hard to figure that out, hard to replace it, hard to put a finger on it.
Stink, if you're the Niners and if you're the Buffalo Bills, how do these both teams view this game? Buffalo coming off a bye, knowing what's at stake, number one team in the AFC, well, trying to be the number one team in the AFC, the Niners fighting for their playoff hope. How do both teams view this mentally?
Yeah, well, I think for the Niners, it's a do-or-die situation. I mean, it doesn't get any easier. They're only one game out of first, so this puts them right back in the hunt. But they're 1-3 in their own division. You know, they only scored 17 against Seattle a week ago. You know, they're reeling right now. So this is a tough situation, obviously, for the 49ers. And I think the other thing, you know, for the Niners is if you get a win against the Bills, who are arguably the best team in the AFC, all of a sudden, what does that do for the energy in your locker room? What does that do for the believability that you can win this division? I think it's huge. And for the Bills, and this is the San Francisco freaking 49ers. They have been in the NFC Championship game. They have been in Super Bowls. They are, you know, we know how loaded their roster is. We know how good some of their players are. Like, they are one of the gold standards of the NFL. And listen, man, anytime you back a professional organization into a corner that has that many professionals, that many guys that have that kind of, you know, that kind of resume, they know their season's on the line. I guarantee you the Buffalo Bills are talking about, do not take this team lightly because they're like a wounded animal and they're going to come out of here and this is do or die for them. They're like, if they don't win this game, to me, their season is over. And so you know what you're going to get. If you're the Bills, you know what kind of effort you're going to get for the 49ers.
Mark Schlereth with us here on Willard and Dibs and Stink. We'll get you out of here after this one. We spent a lot of time yesterday talking about Deebo Samuel and his lack of involvement in the game against Green Bay. Only one offensive touch, had a couple of balls bounce off his hand, one that turned into kind of a game-changing interception for Xavier McKinney and the Packers. What have you seen from Deebo so far this year? And you're talking about backs up against the wall. That's generally when he's at his best. And what do you expect from him in Buffalo coming up on Sunday?
He's looked all season like he's hurt. And, you know, I don't want to say disinterested, but he just looks like he's not the same guy right now. And I don't know exactly what that is. You know, that, like, everybody who plays is hurt. Everybody's got some type of injury and everything else. But he looks like he's played the majority of the season injured. Like, he just hasn't been as dynamic, as threatening. And all the stuff that they have done over the course of the years where they motion him into the backfield and they're running him 6-7 times a game out of the backfield, that he's, you know, doing the reverses and the orbit sweeps and the jets, like all that stuff, it just feels like they're not doing that stuff at the same level and the kind of the same frequency that they've always done it. And so that's always a concern for me because he just doesn't look like the Deebo Samuel we've all been such a huge fans of.
Yeah, I think everyone out here is seeing the same thing, Stink. Appreciate your time as always. What game are you calling this week?
I have got I've got a barn burner. I've got Tampa at Carolina, and I love Baker Mayfield, man. That guy's like a little angry chihuahua. He just is after everybody. It's fun. He's actually playing really well. They've gotten healthy all of a sudden. They've got their players back, and they have got one of the easiest schedules in the National Football League going forward. So I think they're actually going to win the South. And Bryce Young actually has played well the last couple of weeks. So it's good to see a kid, you know, get benched, do it kind of the right way, kind of, you know, embrace it and come out and play pretty well. So that's been kind of cool to watch.
Yeah, well, we'll be watching and listening. Appreciate your time as always. Again, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll catch up with you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving, man. Good to connect. And hey, Lo, man, good to hear your voice, buddy.
Oh, you're the best, brother. We had a great time at the Super Bowl with Chuck, didn't we?
That was unbelievable.
He's crazy. Absolutely. That dude's crazy.
He is crazy. All right, man. Be good, guys.
All right, bro. All right. Cheers.
Thanks, Stink. That's Odyssey NFL Insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day, be delicious. A couple of interesting things from Stink there. I mean, he's seeing what we're all seeing with Deebo, too, right?
Yeah.
He said, I don't want to say disinterested, but it's kind of what it looks like, right?
Right. I mean, that's the thing is with a guy, you don't want to say that he's just not taking it seriously or that he's not trying, right? Because you're not in his body. You don't know what he's feeling day to day. All you can go off is what you see. And what we've seen from Deebo, it's just not at all the same version. There's no way you can slice it where you say, oh, he's actually playing really well. He just isn't. That's a simple fact of how he's looked on tape. And listen, he's not being blocked for yet. Well, we've all talked about it. But Debo's a guy that hasn't needed to be blocked for super, super well and can make positive things happen. And he had that return that got called back. But for the most part, he has not been great. And honestly, if you look back at that screen that they ran for him, if he ran behind Jake Brendel, he might have had a touchdown on that play, but he cut it up inside. So there's just a lot with Deebo where it's not the same guy.
It it goes to show you, people know, and I think you can look this as a good thing and a negative thing. The good is about people hold you at a very, very high regard. You're Deebo Samuel. You're Deebo. You want your cornbread? Deebo used to just mutt guys, like you guys talked about. And that's why you guys are looking like, God, and that's why Stink said, hey, he looks disinterested. We saw Deebo run over linebackers, safeties, linemen, hop on one leg, pull a guy on one leg, and then dive forward and get another 4 or 5 yards. We haven't seen that type of effort. And that's why Stink said disinterested, or maybe he's hurt, or I don't know what a guy is going on, what he's fighting internally. Maybe he's dealing with something mentally, because you don't see Deebo drop 1, 2, 3 passes, come right at him, hit him in his hands, and he drops these balls. That's disinterested, or that's just not attention to details. That's just the want to.
And it's not Deebo. It's just frankly not Deebo. It's never been Deebo.
Exactly. Yeah. So those are those things that you look at and you're like, God, something's going wrong. And, you know, I know some people might say, God, is he losing it? And that's why I don't think he's losing it. I want to say maybe, hopefully it's hurt or just something he's battling with mentally. Because when you look at him, Jake, this guy is so magnificent when he's well and when he's healthy. You don't want to say this guy's quit on this team.
Totally. You talk about the high standard, the high regard we have for Deebo. Right. That's why you criticize him. It's not saying, oh, this is an easy thing to do. It's hard. And that's why you trust a guy like Deebo Samuel to turn a hard situation into something that becomes a positive one.
That's why he got the major contract that he got.
Exactly, because he was a dynamic, transcendent player. And it's obvious when he's not at that level. And so one of the bright spots, and we can talk about this more going forward, is that if this season does go sideways, it might not be the worst thing in the world for guys like that who have been through the ringer with all of these failed playoff runs to just take some time, you know, ease off the pedal for the rest of the season and just say, all right, it's not our year. We're going to get a little bit of rest. We're not going to have to go through this gauntlet, and we'll get right next year. And they're all aging a year older, so that's maybe not the best bet, but it might be the only optimistic view, you know, for me right now.
Yeah. And I think another reason why maybe if things continue to trend downhill, why that might ultimately be a good thing for the Niners as well. We can get into that on the other side. And it's not just draft pick related. That's obviously one area where it might benefit you. You don't have to trade up as far if you want to get a top 10 talent if the bottom falls out of this year. We can break that down, talk more about that. A couple other things that Schlereth said. He thinks most of the Niners' struggle is injury related. A little dangerous, I think, to blame everything that's gone wrong on injuries. He also, I think, a question that Lowe asked, when a team knows that it's over, how does it feel in the locker room? He brought up like some of his best buds in the locker room that didn't play or maybe were his backups. It's hard to not hear that and not think about the impact of Dre Greenlaw not being on the field, because he's kind of this guy's energizer this team's Energizer Bunny at times, and without him, that's probably having a big impact on this team as well. All right, time for a break. It's Willard and Dibs. No Willard and Dibs, but Mark Randy, the great Lo Neal, Jake Hutchinson with you. We're back with more coming up on the other side. We've also got Greg Cosell in about 45 minutes at 4:15. Then we'll change gears and get into Warriors basketball with Steve Kerr, coach the Dubs, coming up at 5. We're sponsored by the all-new Honda of Vallejo. More Willard and Dibs next.
There are three things that don't lie: small children, physicality in the running game, and yoga pants. Those are three things that just flat don't lie.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
That was Stink, Mark Schlereth. There's a few
that
people out
classic.
There like Stink.
That was classic. Classic. He wasn't lying. He being honest. There's three things don't lie to him. Yoga pants. My God, got to pray. Lord help us. Well, y'all too. I got a bone to pick with y'all too.
Uh-oh.
Y'all yesterday was, you know, your boy was flowing, putting the mic down. My man's turning on the beats, you know, like Biggie right now, feeling this. And y'all gave me a little laugh, and I was like, man, you know my tongue, country low, get the tongue a little twisted every now and then. I end up, you know, I call my man Jack, and you look at him, you're like, Jack, who the hell is Jack? And y'all gave the little look, and I was like, all right. I said, I'm gonna let this slide, though. And you did good. You know, Jake just looked. And he was like, it was classic. I saw that yesterday, and then back, and y'all was all had something going. I was like, all right, that's all good. Y'all can mess with your boy. I butchered it. My bad, bro.
Hey, you're good. You're good. Good, baby. You made up for it with the freestyle. I was feeling that. I think everybody's feeling that.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
All good. It's all good. You get one of those.
All right.
We got you, Lo. We got you. Welcome back to Willard and Dibs. No Willard and Dibs. That's Lo Neal. That's Jake Hutchinson. I'm Mark Randy with you. We just had Mark Schlereth on. Great, as always. We've got Greg Cosell coming up at 4:15, and then we'll transition to get into some basketball with Steve Kerr coming up at 5. Lo, you asked Stink a question about like when a season's going bad.
Right.
You feel it going bad. When does a locker room know, all right, let's pack it up, it's over? And he started talking about some of his favorite teammates and guys he loved to have in the locker room, guys that kept the morale up even when things were going down. And you talked about it, your time in Cincinnati when you had bad years and how, you know, you just managed to stay afloat when things are going bad. It was hard for me to hear Stink talk about that and not think about, obviously, the impact that Dre Greenlaw has when he's on the field and just what he does alongside Fred Warner. But just the juice that he brings to the roster and missing him, obviously, you know, he's around the team and he's now his practice window's open and he'll be back out in the practice field tomorrow, I would imagine. But just not having him through the first 11 games this year, not having that Energizer Bunny around, I imagine that's a major impact, maybe in the locker room, potentially more so than what you're missing on the field, although you're missing a lot on the field. But I'm sure that the impact is also felt in the locker room.
Yeah, if you and I are walking, you know, in the Tenderloin together, and it's 2:00 in the morning.
Uh-oh.
You walking with me. You know what? You probably don't want to necessarily be there. I don't probably either, maybe, at certain times, certain situations. Yeah. I'm talking about on a bad night when things could go great. You know what, though? If you're walking with me, you know what? Are you going to be as afraid? Are you guys going to feel a little bit happy?
I'm going to feel a lot better if I'm with you.
Than if I'm walking alone, no doubt.
Okay, so what's the difference when you see if even, you know, and I'm going to feel better if I got you two, believe it or not, I'm going to feel better if I got you two with me. Why? Because I know three's better. Even though I know I can handle myself, you guys know you can handle yourself, but you know if you got Big Low, you know what? I can even handle yourself a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
Fred Warner knows he can handle himself, knows it, whatever. But when you got Greenlaw and you know that now you got your guy that's going out there against Green Bay, that's going out against their, like the Tenderloin, going out against certain teams, Seattle, the Packers, all, you want to have your guys. Now, if you know that I'm in the Tenderloin, you're in the Tenderloin, and I'm on the phone talking to you, guess what? That ain't the same, is it? You feeling a little different because, you know what? I'm talking to you, but I'm not with you walking down that street. It's a difference, and that's the difference, and that's what Schlereth is talking about. We don't have those same guys in the locker room not with you. They're not going with you out to practice. Yeah, I can call you on the phone. Call me on the cell phone and be like, hey, man, hey, good luck. Good luck today. But I ain't going out there with you. I ain't walking to the Tenderloin with you. It's a difference, bro.
Yeah.
So that's what he's talking about.
No question. And it's funny because Dre Greenlaw, this was weeks ago at practice. He was throwing the ball with Fred Warner, and I was just watching from the sidelines. And Greenlaw went up and jumped one-handed. And Warner's like, whoa, like, relax.
Chill.
Greenlaw's been itching to get out there. And I know I've mentioned training camp too much, but you didn't have Warner, John at Brandon Ayuk, which was a story of training camp before, where those guys were just going at it, and it's the whole, you know, it's the coach speak thing of iron sharpens iron, but it is real when it's out there. And when you don't have Dre Greenlaw, a guy who off the field is one of the nicest guys right. in the world, but on the field, he's a maniac. He's
savage.
An absolute lunatic, and I mean that in the most complimentary sense. He's deranged, and there's really nothing that can replace somebody who goes out there and puts truly every single inch of himself on the line.
I mean, think about how Fred Warner reacted the second that Dre Greenlaw tore his ACL in the Super Bowl.
Emotional. The pain in his voice, man.
Never heard Fred like that, and might not ever hear Fred like that again.
Yeah.
Hopefully you don't, because, so incredibly painful.
Yeah, the emotions that he went through. You saw him. He freaking shed a tear on the sideline during a game because he knew what he meant to the team and he knew what it meant to Greenlaw. He wanted to share that moment with Greenlaw. And that's the thing when it's a brotherhood. And that's what Mark was talking about, Slareth, about not having some of their brothers out there on the field, not having those guys in the locker room. When you go out to practice, you know what? They go home. They're going somewhere else, and you're going out to practice. You get them ready to go on the field. They're on the sideline. They're not. It's just a difference. It's a difference. And so when you don't have those things and you start to lose guys, you know in your heart of hearts, God, this is going to be tough sledding without my brothers.
The other thing that Schlereth brought up, and Mark Schlereth was on with us just a little bit ago. If you missed it, free Odyssey app. You can download that, use the rewind feature. You can find it on YouTube, wherever you get your podcast under Willard and Dibbs. Great conversation as always. I asked him, do you think the Niners' struggles, the 5-6 record, you blame injuries more so than anything else? And he kind of hesitantly said, yeah, I think it's probably mostly injuries, but he also admitted there's some other things going on. I don't know how you guys feel. It feels kind of dangerous for me to say everything going wrong with the 49ers is injury-related. Clearly, there's been a lot of injuries, but your quarterback has only missed one game, the most recent game. Obviously, you missed McCaffrey for the vast majority of the season. Trent Williams has played the vast majority of games. Deebo Samuel's played the vast majority of games. George Kittle's played the vast majority of games. Nick Bosa has played the vast majority of games. You've had most of your guys for the entire season, and I feel like if we're blaming what's gone wrong with the 49ers, and certainly it's played at least a small part, but if we're blaming everything that's gone wrong on the injuries that's happened this year, that's taking away from what has really gone wrong and may hurt the 49ers in the future if they just look at it, well, if we're healthy, we're fine. If they're healthy, there's still a lot of these issues popping around.
Absolutely, and I think it goes back. We talked roster construction. The injuries matter because they don't have the depth behind it. But two, it's just even when those guys are out there, there's a lack of execution. There's that level of we could count on, sort of like, you know, the Warriors used to hang around and in the third quarter they just demolish somebody. It's almost like the Niners feel like, all right, well, we can get to that level, and they just don't have it in their bag where they get to a point and they're not executing, and you have either a motion that goes wrong, you have somebody who either misses a block on the offensive line, the protection is wrong in a key third down, or even sometimes Brock Purdy just not seeing it as clearly, probably because the offensive line is not blocking as well. The receivers aren't getting open nearly as well because teams have thrown a ton of man coverage at them. And so it's all of these things that have added up. And when you don't have the depth and you don't have someone like Dre Greenlaw in the locker room to energize you and maybe make a play that makes you feel like, all right, we can turn this thing around, I think that stuff wears on you and you do lose that belief that has been ingrained in them for, you know, these last three seasons.
Without a doubt. And I tell you what, when you get to that point, and you ask guys, man, what do you think? What are people saying? Tell you what people are saying. Other teams are saying, keep it close, they'll find a way to lose. Keep it close, end of the game, they're going to find a way to throw games away. That's what they've done all year. This is consistency. And so you watch teams and you watch, we talked about, even when you beat Seattle on the road, you double digit and Seattle almost backdoored you. Dallas, you're up by double digit, fourth quarter, you almost lose that game. You look at the games, look at Seattle the second time you played them, fourth quarter, you lose it. You're beating an Arizona Cardinal team that's not, you know, they're okay, not great, but you're winning in the fourth quarter. You lose that game. They take the ball. So you watch this team. You find a way, fourth quarter against Green Bay. Green Bay scored, you know, played a great third quarter. Fourth quarter, come Green Bay just rolled them 2-3 more touchdowns. Teams are saying, keep the game close. They'll find a way to lose. They're not a good team.
There's every bit of evidence to support that, that this team is just crumbling. And it's one thing when you have everything working and, okay, we get into a third and long, whatever. We've got enough talent. We've got Ayuk. We've got Debo, Jennings, Kittle, McCaffrey, whatever. Well, they don't have Ayuk, who is their best man-beater receiver. Jennings is good, but he doesn't get a lot of separation. It's a lot of close catches. And then Debo's a shell of himself, and so everything's kind of on Kittle or McCaffrey in short yardage. And it's just no way to live. It's just like this in every game where it gets close because of this lack of execution. And it's exhausting, I think, for everybody to watch and be involved with.
And the 49ers used to be the team that, guess what? Let's keep it close, and they'll crash. They'll fold. We'll make them quit. We'll punch them in the mouth. Fourth quarter, go look at the set last
year.
Wear them down.
That's when they started getting big chunks on the ground.
Big chunks.
Yep.
20 yards, 30 yards.
A 3-yard run in the first half turns into a 12-yard run in the fourth quarter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We have not seen that. And that's the this team has traded places. It's been like from, you know, in the fourth quarter, keep it close. The Niners, here it's going to break. The music part playing. The crowd gets crazy. Everyone just lights up the sideline. You watch the energy. Yep. Kittle's. Now it's opposite. When it's close, you're like, oh, God, something's been, what's getting ready to go wrong? What's going to happen? And you see it week in and week out. Something happens that's not good for the Niners.
Yeah, so with all of that in mind, I think what is dangerous for the 49ers going forward is if, all right, you got all these injuries, and clearly it's had at least somewhat of an impact, but they, you know, manage to stay afloat. Maybe they go 9-8, but they miss the postseason, or even they go 8-9, but you look back on it and you say, man, well, considering all the injuries that we went through, everything that we had to put up with this year, it's pretty darn impressive that we still won 8 or 9 games. Because I think ultimately what might be best for the 49ers is if there's a major reset this offseason. And on maybe the only way that this major reset is able to happen is if Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are forced to make it happen. And maybe the only way they're forced to make it happen is if the bottom falls out of this season. Maybe they don't win another game. Maybe they only beat Chicago the rest of the way, and they're looking at a 5 or a 6 win season. At that point, they evaluate what went wrong this season, and they say, oh, guys, this is much more than just injuries. We got an existential problem here, and we have to make real substantial changes. I'm tired of promoting not assistant coaches that aren't ready from within. We got to go out and get a new, fresh mind to come in here and change things up. You're going to go out and hire a Steve Wilks, but you're going to make him run a defense that he's never run before? No, we're not doing that anymore. You got to change things up. You got to start drafting from the inside out. Draft offensive linemen and defensive linemen. You're drafting first-round pick wide receivers. No targets in Green Bay. 2 targets against Seattle. What are we doing here? Maybe the only way for the 49ers to actually evolve, the word that you used, you're talking about a change in philosophy, maybe the only way for that to happen is if they go winless the rest of the season, they look back on this year as a total embarrassment, and their hand is forced to make a change. If they float around 500, maybe that's not bad enough, and they can write it off as injuries. But this is so much worse than what's gone on the injury report.
Yeah, I think they still have some pieces in place that aren't going to go anywhere. So I think the only way you can, if you want to say wipe the slate clean, I think the biggest thing is, so Brock Purdy is going to get paid this offseason. The only way that changes is if somehow they fall so far out that they get a high draft pick and are in range for a quarterback and can try and leverage that in their discussions to try and at least make the price more palatable. But I think fundamentally they have a lot of pieces that are locked in where wholesale changes, I don't know if that's going to happen. I do think they're going to have to look at defensive coordinator. They're going to have to look at their special teams coordinator.
And no doubt.
And I do think they're going to have to maybe reevaluate their philosophy on going skill position over trenches, at least on the offensive line. And I think if you go that way, at least you can hope for the best and maybe reload. And if you rest some of these old aging starters, you can hope for a better result. But it's tough when so many pieces are locked in for them to fully reboot this thing. And I'm not necessarily sure they need to go that far, but these next few weeks will really tell us where that path is going to be.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think it's a reboot or a reset. Mm-hmm. I think it's where the meeting of the minds that we talked about earlier with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan get together and say, okay, let's get the five defensive DCs that we're going to go after, and what is their philosophy? Now, Cal, are you going to be willing to change this defense because maybe it's not a defense you're familiar with? Are you willing to change? Because this is the type of talent that I've gotten you. I'm going to let you cook. I need to order you the right. I would need to order you the right food to put into your, to make your salad, whatever you're going to create. That's what needs to happen. So, how are those two guys going to say? Because you got some talent. Come on. McCaffrey's still a premier running back. Kittle's still arguably the top three or four tight ends in the league.
Probably been the best tight end this year.
You still have Trent. If he's not the best, there's not four guys better. So you still have an elite talent. So you have Fred Warner still an elite guy. So you have guys that can play that are starters. I'm not saying that, but it's like, are you going to change the philosophy in order for these guys to flourish in the system? You can't just say, bring guys in and say, you got to fit. This is what the system that I'm running. And these guys, because some of them don't fit this system. So it's going to be interesting to see if Kyle Shanahan is willing to say, I'm going to change. Like you just alluded to, people don't talk about that. You brought Jim Wilkes in here, DC, and say, make this work, and this is what it's going to have to be. And here's a guy that wasn't comfortable with that type of front.
It made no sense. They said what they wanted in a DC was someone who has experience and was willing to run their system, and they go out and hire someone who's never ran their system, and they force him to run their system.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was doomed to fail from the beginning.
And now behind the scenes, I'm really interested to see what happens at the end of the season, because Nick Sorensen comes in and he's excited to be defensive coordinator.
Gotten worse.
And no one really believed he's actually defensive coordinator. There's sort of a shadow government thing going on.
Brandon Staley.
Right. And so he, this whole time, and I'm sure he's going about his business, and they have, their own relationship, and they're good. But he's asked so many times at the start of the season about Brandon Staley while simultaneously trying to prove himself as a coordinator. And you go, who's really pulling the strings here, which is just an odd dynamic for a first-time coordinator who's trying to prove himself, especially for a head coach who doesn't really want you to try all that much. Kyle Shanahan, the way he wants it is the way it's always been. Just keep it simple. You try and win with your defensive line, and you keep it simple in coverage. And special teams, he has almost no interest in. And he said that in a number of ways, is that he just wants to avoid disaster on special teams.
Well,
and that stuff might all need reevaluation, because he, at the end of the day, as much as he's this great offensive mind, he does have to be the head coach and be in charge of the entire operation. And those other parts of the operation have slipped, and a lot of that's personnel, but a lot of it's coaching too. And I think you do need to take a deeper look at that and go in and see what's out there on the coaching front and replenish some of those reserves.
Yeah, we got some people on the line that want to talk about this. Let's get them in. 888-957-9570. Jeff in San Francisco is standing by. Jeff, I know you want to talk about Shanahan. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. What you got?
So I've been a Niners fan since the early 80s, so I think I've got a pretty large sample size here. So I think this is the way I've been thinking about it. I think you have to give Shanahan and Lynch their roses for – we all remember the Tom Sula years, right? I mean, that was brutal. And the Walsh quote was always like, you want to develop a high base camp, right? You want to be able to hang around the summit and then periodically kick through. And obviously they failed to do that the last 4 or 5 years. But I'd like to hear what you guys think about this. Is that I think we've seen enough of Shanahan at this point that he might be an elite offensive coordinator. He seems like a really mediocre head coach, and you were just alluding to that. And I think you don't really hear anybody locally talking about this, which is that they're always a top five offense, and they always seem to lose the lead in the second half. And if you look at Steve Kerr and the Warriors, those guys come out, they make their adjustments at half, and they blast teams in the third quarter. This team, like you guys said, teams hang around, they wait around, and they seem to make adjustments. If we don't, he seems glued to a sheet. So I don't know, I'd love to hear what you guys think about the OC versus the head coach, because I think we have a subpar head coach here in San Francisco.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Jeff. I get the Steve Kerr and the Warriors comparison. Kind of a bad time to make the comparison, because they just blew two big second-half leads. But, I mean, when the Warriors were at their peak, you're right. I mean, they were the third-quarter dubs, and they would blow teams out. They wouldn't really need to try in the first half, and they'd put up 50 points in the third quarter, and the game would be over. This is like a comment, a complaint about Shannon I think we get often, and everyone talking about the Niners gets. And it, I think generally it can be boiled down to, does he just need to get a little bit taken off of his plate? Does he have just too much to worry about? Does he need a little bit of help? I think this also goes back to the coaching staff. Is the cupboard just bare? Do you have anybody on the staff that you fully trust? Like Mike McDaniel, who's doing good things in Miami now. Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator of the Texans. Does Shanahan have a guy that he really trusts and can bounce ideas off of like he did a couple of years ago? That may be an area where that comes into play. Kyle Shanahan's still a very, very good head coach. Obviously, he's an offensive guy, so everyone always says, maybe just make him the offensive coordinator, just in charge of calling the plays, doesn't need to do everything else. Maybe he just needs a little bit more support from those around him.
Yeah, I think people miss some stuff about Kyle and are right on other fronts. I think reasons to criticize Kyle, there are some game management questions.
Yep.
He gets extraordinarily conservative at the end of first halves. For a guy who really doesn't like special teams, my Lord, does he love to just, let's settle for a field goal here
instead of push for a touchdown.
And quote-unquote lap him and come out of the second half and score.
Is it really a lap if you just kick two field goals?
Right. So that's maddening, and I think that is a very fair critique of Kyle. He's also just innately stubborn because he's usually been the smartest guy in the room, but he also has to let you know he is. That said, I think he is a guy who came in, he and John had a vision for this team. They built it from the ground up, and it took time. It took time for guys to get buy-in, and over the years, they've had all of these stars come out of it who understand the vision, they understand the scheme, and that makes it easier to build on that. And so I think Kyle has to be given a ton of credit for building this thing from the get-go and working it up to where he wants it to be. That said, there is a time for reevaluation and reflection, and I think losing all the coaches he has lost makes it a lot harder because you have to teach all these new guys, all these new coaches who haven't been in the scheme, who don't have that shared experience. And so I think you get into a situation where I do think Kyle needs a little bit of help in terms of shared knowledge, or at least somebody testing him in a new way that you can bring in on the coaching staff. But fundamentally, guys, if you fire Kyle Shanahan, he will be hired before he's out the door else. The idea that Kyle is a bad head coach, I think, is fundamentally incorrect. Is he flawed in a number of ways? Absolutely.
Who's
and I
not?
Won't happily criticize him, but he does have major flaws, but he's a great head coach.
Yeah, I think there's what coach is not majorly flawed. I mean, all coaches make mistakes, and Kyle Shanahan is no exception to the rule. He's a very brilliant guy, very smart guy, comes from a football background. You see what his father did, you see what he's done. This guy's been to two Super Bowl, for heaven's sakes, in the last 5-6 years. Name another team that's done that. Kansas City. Who else is on the line? I mean, that's what I'm saying. What he's done. Yeah, he's runner up, and I know should have won titles, people were thinking, but my God, the guy's been amazing. I think it's the latter of the two, like you guys are continuing to talk about. Your cupboards are bare because so many people have pillaged your coaching staff. And so many teams have said, look, I want what you have. I want some of that. And so what do? We're going to go and take the guys that you love, and we're going to take them and make them head coaches and offensive coordinators, and we're going to take your staff. And now you're going to be bare, and you're going to be forced to bring in guys that were carrying water buckets and just interim coaches, and now they're your coaches? Now they're DCs and offensive coordinators? You put them in roles that maybe they didn't see fit and you thought you could micromanage? Because, hell, we talk about it. Two times in a row, you had 12 guys on the field, offsetting penalties, and then the next play, offset, and another 12 men on the field. That's not Kyle Shanahan's fault. That's because the other coaches, lack of coaches that are out there. So I think it's a lot more than just Kyle Shanahan. I think he's a great coach, and that's why he hired the coach from the Chargers brought him in.
Brandon Staley.
Staley, because he was a DC with the Rams, went to a Super Bowl, and because this guy was a head coach. So he said, hey, I'm going to go bring in another head coach guy that can help. I don't know if it's working or not, but he's trying to do better things.
I think you struck a nerve. We can get into that more on the other side. We've also got sound from Baldy, who was on with the Morning Roast earlier today, talking about those penalties. You're going to want to hear what he had to say about that. He was very blunt and to the point, as Baldy always is. Plus, we've got Greg Cosell coming up in about 20 minutes at 4:15. Steve Kerr at 5 as we keep rolling here on Willard and Dibbs, but no Willard and Dibbs this Thanksgiving week. It's Mark Randy, Lo Neal, Jake Hutchinson. More coming up next here on 95.7 The Game. We are presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises.